Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Have you ever held a sunflower seed in your hand or a pumpkin seed in your hand? Probably as you looked at it, you thought, might be good to eat. And we've eaten a lot of pumpkin seeds in our day. And about a month ago, we were eating quite a few of them right around Halloween time. Today, though, we're going to talk about a beautiful photo book that goes beyond just looking at the seed or the outside of a seed, and it gives you a different perspective on these little organisms. The book's title is Seeing Seeds, A Journey into the World of Seed Heads, Pods, and Fruit. Over 100 seeds, fruits, and pods are represented through stunning, I'm telling you, underlined photos, and some pretty stunning, I will underline as well, writing. Our guest, Terry Chase, is a writer and editor. She's more than 30 titles in publication, including the predecessor of this one called Seeing Seeds, Seeing Flowers, excuse me. And Terry, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me, Larry.
I really appreciate having you with us. And Robert Llewellyn, a plant and landscape photographer, oh boy, talk about wonderful photography here. His photos have been featured in major art exhibits, more than 30 books, and including this one. And it's great to have you with us as well today, Robert. Thank you so much.
Hi, Larry.
You know what? I was thinking about this morning, and I thought, if I had had this book in my freshman year in college in that original horticulture class I took, I might well have majored in horticulture.
We would have been interviewing you.
I'm telling you, this is such lovely writing and such lovely photography of these seeds. I was just dumbstruck as I looked through read your book. It's really, really something, and I hope a lot of people have a chance to see the photos in the book, but also to read read your writing, because you are you have a wonderful way with words, for sure.
Oh, thank you. I want people to understand, though, that this is not a science book.
Well, that's what I, it's a fun book. See, that's my whole point when I talked about I would have been inspired to turn to a career in horticulture from what you wrote and from what I saw what I see.
I'll let Bob speak to his photographs, but I will just say that I agree. The book is absolutely gorgeous, and what we tried to do was help people see seeds in a new way. Tell them things that they might not have known, tell them things that they might have not realized that they knew about seeds, but to make it kind of an adventure. Sort of, I took a little inspiration from Jules Verne. You know, you go on a journey thinking you know a few things, and you learn a lot of things you didn't expect to know.
Oh, I would 100% agree with you on that. And Bob, your photography is just unbelievable. The seeds, seeds are beautiful.
Oh, I think so. I mean, and the amazing thing is it's all hiding in plain sight. These are not hard things to find, but you see them, but you don't really look at them. And but I tried photographing them outdoors, and sort of too much competition visually, so I ended up with them on a light table and sort of photographing them like some of the old botanical paintings, very, very high detail with white background, so you can see it very clearly.
I love that. I love that approach. Have you had a showing of these anywhere?
Yes, actually, quite a few shows, and I actually make them into 8-foot prints, and everything is sharp.
Oh boy!
They have a seed that's maybe an eighth of an inch in size, and suddenly it's 8 feet. And it sort of reminds me of, if you'd gone to another planet and you had to bring back evidence of what was there, and you had this 8-foot seed, it sort of looks as large as it is on the print.
Well, it is really stunning, and the book itself, I really want to see an 8-foot rendering of some of those photos. It would just absolutely be beautiful. And this, how did you guys come to put this book together, by the way? Terry, maybe you can talk about that.
Well, this is our second collaboration, and it's been a blast because we're compatible, because we're both so curious and excited about the natural world. The other one that you mentioned was about flowers, and I just want to mention that someone who was reviewing Seeing Flowers remarked that Bob's photography has, quote, the same heartbreaking clarity of a 19th century botanical illustration.
Yeah.
They're not the kind of photographs that regular people with a point-and-shoot camera can take, and I think I should hand it over to Bob to maybe reveal a little bit of his secrets of his technique.
First I'd like to say, you know, we did the book Seeing Flowers, and that was a great adventure also, and I was photographing a catalpa flower, and it looks like an orchid. It's a little white flower, and it has black lines leading down inside of it. So I asked a botanist what the lines were for, and she said they're to guide the insects into the flower to pollinate it.
Yes, like landing strips at the airport.
Right. Some will be heavy or clear, one way, 2-1. But this light bulb went off, and I went, wow, they've got a plan. So this is a new civilization in mm-hmm. a sense that we don't notice that's living right among us. And the other day I went to the catalpa tree, and now those white flowers are this 18-inch-long brown seed pod that are splitting mm-hmm. open. And inside are these seeds that have aircraft. They're winged, and they fly on the wind. And you can almost see the catalpa tree saying, goodbye, stay in school, get a job. Yeah, they're children going off into the world, and that they've engineered this way of moving the catalpa trees across the planet.
Well, right away, the first sentence in the book, or one of the first, maybe it is the first sentence in the book, is a seed is both the beginning and the end of a plant's life.
And how many things can you think of that self-replicate? I mean, not even an iPhone can do that. It is absolutely amazing. It's very humbling to learn about seeds.
Well, I really enjoyed your first. I enjoyed the book, but the entire book, but the first chapters that on seeds. What is a seed? What is it made up of? And how interesting each part of the seed really is. And even the very, very smallest seed has an embryo. It has an endosperm and a seed coat.
Yeah, I wanted to not make it too sciencey, as I said earlier, but could we just give an example for your listeners?
Please do.
I'd like to talk about acorns, because everybody knows acorns. Even mm-hmm. if they don't know exactly which kind of oak tree it is, they know it's the fruit of the oak tree, right?
Yep.
I learned something really interesting about acorns. I already knew that different acorns have slightly different, you know, the little cap on one end and the nipple at the other end.
Right.
The material inside is meant to nourish the embryo. This is really interesting what I learned. There's a little tiny embryo inside each acorn. It's not that the acorn is the seed, but the embryo is inside of the acorn. Okay, are you following me so far?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Try not to be too sciencey. And, you know, squirrels collect bees in the fall and bury them all over the place so that they can come back later and have a meal when they need one. Well, have you ever seen these stashes? I've run into them in the park near where I live, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't germinate, usually. They don't usually germinate. You don't see them all sprouting. Why not? I looked into it. It turns out that squirrels have figured out there's an embryo in there which will spoil their meal. So they bite off the end, that's sort of the nipple end where the embryo is, and then they bury the seeds, bury the acorn.
Yeah.
And then they don't germinate. Well, that's not even the end of the story, Larry, because then what has happened over time is oaks have responded to this. I'm talking about millennial time, okay?
Yeah.
Centuries and centuries. Have responded by scooting the embryo further back in. So this is an ongoing thing that we don't really know about or see going on between the squirrels and the oak trees. And got a balance because we still have squirrels and they still have enough to eat and we still have oak trees. But it's absolutely fascinating. And those are the sorts of stories that we uncovered in the process of making this book.
It's a wonderful story. There's another book, another wonderful book about oaks. It's just as an aside, how the oaks kind of marched across Europe. I don't know if you've, I can't remember the exact title of it right now, but...
Tell Santa Claus.
Oh, my goodness. Here we are. And I haven't even given the number, I don't think. I'm talking today with Terry Chase and Robert Llewellyn, who have created this book. It's called Seeing Seeds, A Journey into the World of Seed Heads, Pods, and Fruit. And you may have some questions. I hope you'll join in. Maybe it's about seeds. Maybe you've got an experience with seeds you want to share. Maybe a question about a particular kind of seed. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. And our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. So give us a call, go to online, or go to our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Well, so as we look at seeds, why are seeds are really diverse? And that's a chapter in your book, actually.
There's some really strange seeds, and leave it to Bob Llewellyn to capture it.
No, he's. Why are they?
Well,
why are they so diverse?
Yeah,
each one has its own mechanisms, its own unique mechanisms, its own stories. Their goal is to self-replicate, but the way they do it, and the way they protect themselves, and the way they disperse themselves varies a great deal. I like to tell people when they see this book for the first time, every seed has a story.
But one of my favorite stories is the castor bean. I had it as a seed pod in my studio, and I heard this loud pop one day, and it shot the seed 30 feet across the studio. So I looked it up, and it turns out on the end of the seed is a little piece of fat. And the engineering, as I understand it, is that the ants grab the seed and take it down into their burrow and feed the fat to their children. And then they dispose of the seed in the refuse pile, but essentially planting the castor bean seed for them.
Oh, isn't that cool? There are so many ways that you talk about it, that other ways that seeds get themselves spread around the world.
Yes, I would say probably about half of the seeds in the world use a method that I call in the book in the belly of the beast. In other words, they get eaten. By something.
Yep.
And then, of course, that something, let's say it's a bird, flies away and poops it out, for lack of a better word, with a starter dose of fertilizer. I mean,
sure.
You can't beat that system. It works a lot of the time. And what's interesting, though, is you think about it, say an apple. And Bob has one of the most amazing, sexiest photographs of an apple. With its seeds that I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's incredible. So anyway, let's talk about the apple for a second. We eat them. We don't eat the seeds. You may have heard that you shouldn't eat the seeds, but there really isn't enough harmful chemical in them to really hurt you if you did. But you know apple seeds are slick, right?
Yep.
They're not covered with burrs or anything like that. They're slick and smooth. That's so that they can pass through the digestive tract of the dispersal agent, whether it's you, me, or a bird, without getting broken and harmed. I mean, it's not foolproof, but enough of them do.
Amazing story, and that's just one of many amazing stories in this book that we're talking about with Terry Chase and Robert Llewellyn, called Seeing Seeds, A Journey into the World of Seed Heads, Pods, and Fruit. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network here of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11:45 today, we're going to be talking about garden landscaping and maybe how to build your own straw bales and gardens and raised beds with our next guest. Right now, though, visiting about a great book called Seeing Seeds, A Journey into the World of Seed Heads, Pods, and Fruit. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. And let's take a call. Ray in Rhinelander, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you. And once again, thank both of the people you have on for a very interesting presentation. I have two things. One is to Bob Llewellyn. Are you by chance related to the Llewellyns out of Minneapolis that did all the productions of books, et cetera, and photographs related? And also, I would like to know what is the maximum purpose and what's the advantage and how as far as spreading seeds around when birds and animals eat these seeds, they don't digest in their systems, and as they defecate and move around, what purpose might some of that have to do within our biosphere? And once again, I can't wait to get this book, and thank you very much for being on, and have a good day.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Bob, are you related to the Llewellyns of Minneapolis?
Not that I know of, but... like I say, humans are dispersing themselves around the planet, too.
I like that. Well, is maybe there's something in the name of Llewellyn that there's something in the gene of the name that makes for good photographers. Who knows? What about his other comment or his other question?
Oh, can I take that question?
Yes, Terry, go ahead.
This is Terry, the author here. Yes, I pondered that myself when I was writing the book. It seems that plants are very wasteful. They produce a ton of seeds. And if every single one of them sprouted, we'd be completely overrun and outnumbered. So I wondered about that. I do have an answer for you. It's very interesting. And when you hear it, I think you'll agree that it makes sense. The seeds need to feed the things that eat them. Because they have an interdependent relationship. We can't let the birds go out of business or the squirrels go out of business, or ourselves, I suppose. And the other thing that happens is seeds that do not germinate for whatever reason and get cast out into the world break down into the soil and support the ecosystem. So it really is all in balance, and it's not wasteful. If producing tons of seeds was completely stupid... of a plant, and then that plant would not, in the Darwinian sense, still be with us. It wouldn't survive. So there is a method to the madness. It isn't wastefulness, really.
I you're absolutely right. There was a comment from Chris that I wanted to bring up as well. It just relates to grass. Chris says there's a beautiful grass called love grass, and the way it disperses its seed is just gorgeous. They develop these lavender-colored seeds at the top of the grasses. Do you know the love grass?
Of course, I don't know that particular species, but I can believe that it's beautiful, and I wish Bob could photograph it. And grasses do produce an awful lot of seed. They also produce by underground runners, as everybody knows. But it's all part of the goal of every plant to continue itself to future generations.
Greg in Rock Falls has a question. Let's go there next. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I was wondering if you were familiar with the Kentucky coffee tree.
Oh, yes.
Such an interesting seed.
It's a pod, I believe.
It's a pea family plant.
Right. Yes. There are other trees that are in the pea family, too, that have pods. And it's quite amazing how it goes. I mean, Bob had been speaking earlier of a tree that he likes, the catalpa. It's quite amazing how you get a flower that looks one way and in the end a pod that looks completely different. We walk by these plants every day. And the process of A turning to B, shall we say, is absolutely remarkable if we would stop and watch it going on, you know, pay a little bit more close attention. I think we'd be completely awestruck.
Yeah. Greg, have you had some experience with a Kentucky coffee tree?
Yes, I have one growing in my nursery bed from a seed that came up stray, which is unusual because originally the trees were commonly spread by mastodons eating them. And they're not too common anymore because the seeds are about the size of a penny and about 3/8 of an inch thick with a very, very hard seed coat. And they have to be abraded in order for them to be able to germinate.
Right. We horticulturalists, when we get our hands on the seeds of something that we want to grow, have to unlock nature's secrets.
Yeah.
And abrading a hard seed coat is one way we do it, sometimes soaking something in water, sometimes nicking it with a file. All of this is us trying to intervene in a process that would go on without us, but perhaps not in the way we'd like.
No, there we go. Greg, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
They're pretty rare. There's a few along the shores of Monona and Wingra, I think. They're
in Madison.
They were used as game tokens by Native Americans.
Oh, how interesting.
And that's the only reason there. But there are a few up this way. They're not normally up this far north, but they grow here.
What?
Well, I would just say, horticulturally speaking, that it's great when things are raised from seed because then you're preserving the genetic diversity. As you know, nurseries and many of us gardeners also like to raise things in easier and faster way, like with cuttings, where you'll get more uniformity, but you probably won't be able to preserve or take advantage of genetic diversity. So raising things from seed is worth doing in and of itself.
Yeah. And Greg, and thank you very much for calling. And this whole business about seed coats, I was coming up again, and you were talking about how you abrade them. But seed coats, they protect, as you write about, they protect the embryo inside, but they also, if I'm not mistaken, sort of determine when that embryo develops. Is that correct?
Yes, they try to keep moisture and insects and other problems out so that the embryo can develop to maturity and then quote unquote know when to let go and let the plant start sprouting. And how do seeds know when it's safe? If they're buried deep in the ground or off somewhere drifting in a muddy river? These are questions we don't have all the answers to.
Yeah, they said the lotus seeds are a very hard coating and often get buried in the mud for hundreds of years. And the Chinese have carbon dated some of them up to 1,000 years that germinate.
That's amazing.
The embryo lives there, inside of there, for 1,000 years. So it's an amazing civilization that.
Well, right here in Wisconsin, we found, doing some road work, which is when this often happens, a clay pot, only it was completely, we call it more like a clay bottle almost, and inside that clay bottle were some seeds, some squash seeds from that Native Americans had left, and they were hundreds of years old. And
were they in any condition to germinate? Did someone try it?
They germinated, and there's many squash now from that.
That is awesome.
And I have two seeds from one of the children from the parent, the third generation, I think. And I'll be growing them this coming summer.
That will be really interesting.
And I actually had a chance to taste them. So you're at Bob, and Bob's talking about 1,000 years reminded me of that very story. And I'm just, it's just absolutely amazing that seeds can survive that long. Well, again, Greg, thank you so much for calling. I want to give Robert in Culver, Minnesota, a chance to join us. Robert, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, and thank you. My question is, first off, I'm going to build a raised flower bed and say 8 inches above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use railroad ties around this raising, old ones. Will the creosote in the railroad ties bother the growing, the dirt, and for the plants to...
And the seeds?
Not grow along the side of them, you know, on the inside of the
As a gardening author, I get this question all the time. And creosote is bad for the soil and bad for plants, but you're not growing edible plants, and you say that your railroad ties are really old, so it might work.
Okay.
It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah.
There's ways. I know people have tried different approaches. And our next guest, as a matter of fact, is coming at 11:45 and probably talk more about this. So, Robert in Culver, Minnesota, I hope you'll stay listening. But there are ways that you can do the lining of the inside, line the inside to kind of protect that creosote from leaking into the soil that you're using to grow your plants. So it's something to think about. Nancy in Belleville has a comment. So let's go there. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and guests. I'm just delighted by the topic that you're talking about today. And I saw a very interesting documentary, and it's called The Secret Life of Plants. And I'm thinking probably both of your guests have seen it, but maybe your listeners have not. And it's online. I think you can just Google Secret Life of Plants. And it shows that there are actually connections. One of the things, actually it was jaw-dropping on many fronts, but one of the things was that there was a connection between a mother tree and its seeds and seedlings after they had been shed from the tree. It also showed different growth rates of roots and different kinds of sprouting of seeds and plants that put out toxins when attacked by a certain parasite. It's a fascinating thing. I just wanted to share that with your guests and listeners.
I think it's a BBC show. I think you can get that on YouTube.
I think it might be, but
yeah.
You can
it's
get
fantastic.
It on the internet. You can Google it and watch it, and it's absolutely stunning.
Your comment brings up something that I mentioned in the book that's kind of interesting, and which is if you think of the mother plant and the baby plants, to use that metaphor, they need to get away from their mother. Just as my son needs to go off to college. They need to because, physically, they'll bump their heads on, they won't be able to compete next to a mature plant. And also the mother plant uses the nutrition and moisture in the soil for herself. So it's important for the babies to go out into the world and find their own place. And that is a very practical reason why seeds disperse far from the mother plant. No matter how they do it, they need to get out in the world.
What are some of the other seeds, maybe go to your both of you, that are so unusual in terms of maybe how they grow or how they actually propagate?
I have one. One of my favorite is... it's in the book. It's called Devil's Claw, and it looks like an alien spacecraft.
Yes.
And it's huge. It's like 5 inches in diameter, and it's got razor-sharp claws on it.
It belongs in the new Star Wars movie, maybe.
Yeah, and no matter how you... It's three-dimensional sculpture. No matter how you turn it, it's beautiful. And, I mean, it'll draw blood. It's very sharp. And it's designed, as I understand it, for large animals. It'll grab hold of large animals, and they'll take it away from the original plant and eventually crush it, and there are 4 seeds inside. But it's the most beautiful seed delivery vehicle I've ever seen.
Oh, well, what about you, Terry?
Which one is my favorite?
Yeah.
Wow. I think what really interests me is milkweed. Milkweed is a fascinating seed pod, and if you've seen them, you know that they're very complicated. They take a lot of energy for the plant to produce. And it wasn't until I looked into it further that I realized what a production a milkweed pod is, because a single plant will have about 8 droopy flowers on it. I don't know if you've noticed that walking by a field. Yes, up to, and each one has, 75 or 80 little blossoms each. And yet you only get 1 flower from each umbel becoming a pod. Only one.
Yeah.
How does it happen? I think the theory is that somehow the plant decides to invest all its energy in just one.
They have a big meeting and decide.
They do rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Well,
how do plants decide to do this or that? In this book, we've been privileged to peer into the world of plants and discover some of their secrets, but there's still a lot more to learn, and anybody can learn these things with careful observation. You don't have to be a botanist or a scientist to learn how a plant works. You just have to open your eyes and pay attention and visit it more than once.
Yeah, and milkweed, of course. I'm glad you mentioned milkweed, because milkweed has become a very important plant. And we've talked about it quite a few times on this program because of monarch butterflies.
Right. So they should have a chance to go to seed. We want them to.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're to our mind, they're not that efficient.
But they do the job. Dan
absolutely.
In Boulder Junction. Let's go there.
I'm just awestruck.
Dan, hi. Thanks for calling.
How and why and so forth do oak trees know that the population level of critters that thrive on acorns has risen to the point that once every 5 or 6 years they produce a bounty crop of acorns, 20% to 40% in excess of what they normally produce? How do the tree know that that has happened?
I wish I could answer that question. Other nut trees do that too. And they have what's called mass years, which is, you know, mass quantities are produced. Somehow, they sense what's going on in the world around them. How can that be when they're stationary and they're not human or animal? But somehow they have their rhythms and they have their sensitivities to the environment around them. I hate to say it, but it's a mystery to me as much as I've studied it. I'm prepared to imagine that there are clever and curious people trying to find these answers. And whether they will give up their secrets to us or not remains to be seen.
Interesting question, Dan. And by the way, a nut, as you point out in your book, is not a seed.
No, not technically. The seed is in there, just like we were talking about acorns.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a comment from Paul, and I'm pronouncing this correctly. The coca de mer seed from Seychelles is the largest seed in the world. Paul said I sent one to one of the seeds to the Mitchell Conservatory in Milwaukee from Seychelles around 1980. You can probably see it there. And I don't know what size. He doesn't say what size the seed is. To your mind, what is the largest seed? Or do you know?
I don't know, but I would certainly guess it would be something tropical.
Thought it was the coconut.
It might be the coconut. And it might be a certain type of coconut, because there's more than one kind.
I know the record in the tropics, the record for trees shooting seeds is 200 feet.
Yes, wow. Yes, I mentioned that in the book. Tropical plants, there's a great deal of diversity. As we know, some of these tropical ecosystems are under threat, but they don't necessarily use the same techniques and methods that you see in a more temperate climate like this. For example, some seed pods up here burst open when they dry out. Tension is created and they go bang, ping.
Yeah.
Right. In the tropics, sometimes they become so saturated that the tension causes them to burst open.
Oh, that makes sense, too. That makes sense. Mary in Eau Claire up next with a question. Mary, what's on your mind?
Well, I heard the naturalist at Beaver Creek, a local nature reserve, he was telling us that the wild milkweed, the stuff that grows by the roadside,
yeah,
that if we planted it, that we could only expect germination from one seed in 100.
Yes, it's that wastefulness I was talking about before, what we call wastefulness.
Yeah, I'm just puzzled about that, and I just wondered why only 1% having put all that energy into one pod, why only 1% of
1% germination rate actually is not unheard of in the plant world in general.
Is that right?
These odds. It's almost sea turtles laying 100 eggs on a beach almost have it easier than some of these seeds. It's an incredible process to survive to the point of producing successful offspring, and that's why they produce so many, to hopefully get at least a handful of them in the next generation.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We had Eric Wondered from Wausau. Said, I recently saw perfectly round seeds that were black and the size of a pencil lead. Would there be any chance that you would know what kind of seed that could be? There could be a lot of it.
I think I need some more clues.
So it's a very small but perfectly round. There are many perfectly round seeds, if I'm not mistaken.
There are, but, you know, listening to that question made my mind flitted to poppies. But if you look at poppy seeds, they're actually not perfectly round.
No, they kind of almost feel perfectly round if you put one in your...
Yeah, but if you look at them as closely as Bob Llewellyn's camera...
Well, believe me, I'm going to believe Bob, because Bob would definitely know. Bob, do you have some perfectly round seeds that you've photographed for the book? Yes, you do.
Yeah, I do, and I don't know. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing is, you know, I sort of collected them all as I photographed them, and I put them all in one picture, which is in the book. And just sheer diversity is just phenomenal. I had a lot of these. I had as flowers in the studio, and then the flower would sort of wither and fall off, and then this seed pod would emerge, sometimes even in a glass of water. It really occurred to me that you know, such, again, back to the plan, that these flowers were to attract insects. They were, you know, pretty close. And then once they're pollinated, once they go to the seed thing, they just drop the flower, and this pod is usually dark and very totally different from anything that you would never know is related to that flower. So,
well, you have an amazing book. Let's get a quick comment from Gavin before we close. Gavin, you have a comment on the milkweed?
Yeah, I thought that was a really fascinating discussion briefly about milkweed and oak masting as well. And I wanted to mention I had a professor who would call the milkweed pollination strategy as a Las Vegas pollination strategy, because it's very unlikely that pollination will actually occur for any given flower. It's kind of hard to get pollinated because of the flower structure and the pollination strategy of the pollinators. So I thought that was interesting. It's kind of a high-risk, high-reward. And then about the oak masting, from my understanding, it's not the oaks that are sensing what's going on in the environment or with the animals, you know, and their populations, but rather it's populations that respond to the oak trees that happen to mast every several years.
That's a very good point.
But I wouldn't rule out some sort of sentience with the plants.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not trying to get all woo-woo on you, but there's a lot of things we don't know.
And I tell you what, there's a lot of things I didn't know about seeds, and I know a whole lot more. I still don't know everything, but I know a whole lot more thanks to your book, your wonderful book. Thank you so much, Terry and Bob, for spending time with us today. I really enjoy your book, and we have links to the book, and of course you can get it anywhere, I expect. But we have links to the book on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and thank you so much again for being with us today.
Sure.
I appreciate it very much. Terry Chase is a writer and editor. She was basically the writer for the book that we've been talking about today. It's titled Seeing Seeds, A Journey into the World of Seed Heads, Pods, and Fruit. It's just an absolutely wonderful book with some tremendous photography, and something you definitely will want to take a look at. You're also going to want to take a look at the next The book that we'll be discussing next as well, it's called Growing People, How Green Landscapes and Garden Spaces Can Change Lives. And so we're going to talk about that and get down and into some really specifics, too, about different types of gardening with our next guest coming up here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.